Blog Talk Radio.
Koda, Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluwa Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun, to all the God children, Mojuba Egun to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe,
Ashe,
O.
Ashe, O. Welcome to Sign of the Times, everyone. This is Queen Tahira. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the UAC, United African Coalition for Justice and Human Rights, and New Power Radio Network. We began the UAC after the unjust settlement verdict of July 2013, and we'd like to thank you for supporting us and our sponsors, Manhood Racing Culture, headed up by my co-host on Wednesday nights, Dr. James Jones. You can find him as James Jones on Facebook, as well as a like and group page for Manhood Racing Culture, and on the World Wide Web at manhoodraceculture.com. Also, please support Arlie Gordon of Unity Design. Unity is spelled U-N-I-T-E-E. You can find Brother Arlie on Facebook and on the World Wide Web at unitydesign.com. And last but not least, we want to always remember to never forget our beloved brothers and sisters who are behind enemy lines and the family and friends and loved ones that they represent. So please reach out to Unheard Voices, the Free Alabama Movement and the Free Ohio Movement, respectively on Facebook and on the World Wide Web at freealabamamovement.com and freeohiomovement.org. We also want to remind you to please go to the Redistribute the Pain campaign page on WordPress. It's redistribute the pain, all one word, .wordpress.com. Find out how you can get involved. And if you have a family or loved one or friend who is behind enemy lines, and maybe you haven't spoken to them for a while, please reach out to them because I know that it means a lot to our brothers and sisters to hear from us. So if you need any help finding a loved one or friend, reach out to me. I can be reached at area code 513-913-2691, 513-913-2691, and we can help you find your loved one if for some reason you don't know exactly where they are within this mass incarceration system. So tonight we are going to have a brief broadcast tonight. My co-host can be with us for an hour, so we're going to go ahead and get the conversation started. Welcome to Sign of the Times. Who am I speaking with?
Greetings.
Hello?
Greetings.
Greetings. Sorry, I hit the wrong 310. Welcome, both of you.
Okay, cool. That means I can be quiet. I'm good. I'm good. I can y'all do y'all thing.
I say, well, welcome to both of you, and especially my co-host tonight, Sister Tessnet. Greetings, sis.
Greetings, Queen, and greetings, King. How you doing, sis?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm well. I'm pretty excited about this this discussion.
Yes, it's a well-needed one, and you know we can never talk about the things that are often hidden from our community enough, because that's truly the only way that we're going to get to the healing process. So, please introduce yourself to the listeners and talk about why, to you, tonight's topic is important.
Greetings, everyone. My name is Tessanette Mary E.T. And let's see, who am I? I am an overcomer of domestic violence. And I didn't know that domestic violence was subtle. I only thought that if a dude put his hands on you, that was considered domestic violence. And I was so, how can I say? Yeah, so like disillusioned. But I was able to overcome, you know, domestic violence because I chose to get out of it and I chose to make better choices and decisions for my life to the point where I wrote a book about my experience. And the name of my book is called Revelation, Unveiling the Mask, because you know, I came from the Christian faith, and in the Christian faith, us sisters can wear that mask very well. And I noticed in the conscious community that the sisters wear the mask very well as well. And I've been in the conscious community for about maybe like a year and a half, going on 2 years now. And I just noticed, you know, that, you know, the sisters, not saying all of them, but I just noticed that a lot of the sisters still haven't healed from whatever issues that they have gone through. It could be traumatic. It could be domestic violence. And domestic violence is a traumatic experience if you never experienced it. And so I've never heard anyone talk about it. I've never seen any any workshops about it, because I know it happens, you know, and so I felt the need to talk about it because it's unseen, you know, in the Black community and in the conscious community, I want to say. And, you know, it's just certain things that we don't talk about because we don't want nobody in our business, but this is a very relevant subject that needs to be, you know, addressed and brought to the forefront, because I'm sure there's some sisters out in the listening audience who were just like me, didn't realize that intimate partner violence or domestic violence can start subtle, and it can start really small, and you'd be like, oh, yeah, whatever, you know what I mean? And then you move it on, and then it escalates and gets worse and worse till it becomes physical. And so that's why I talked to my sister, Queen T, to say, sis, let's discuss this, you know, because we need to break the silence. And so let's get with it.
Ashe, it's interesting that you point out that the abuse can come in such a subtle way. And that's one of the characteristics, if you will, of a person who is abusive, is that it's very rarely that they come straight out the gate with, you know, the real them, if you will.
Right.
They do have a tendency to reel you in first. And so that says a lot, not only about them and I guess their need to control, but it also says a lot about us as women and our need for love, you know, and
right.
the fact that even though this love is abusive, a lot of our sisters are willing to accept it.
Right. And I was one of them. I was one of them, honey. All the brother had to do was say all the right things back in the day. And, baby, let me tell you, I was falling for it. And the reason why I fell for it is because I didn't feel good about me. You know what I'm saying? I didn't feel good about me. I felt less than. And I'm going to tell you where it started from, sis. It started from when I found out that my biological mother allowed my dad to raise me. And when I found that out at the age of 13, that's when I immediately started saying something's wrong with me, because something got to be wrong with me if my own mama gave me away. That's where the low self-esteem and the not feeling worthy and not feeling I'm not good enough came from. And I carried that into my adulthood, you know what I'm saying? And so it caused me to, you know, make decisions that if I knew better and felt better about myself, I wouldn't have never made. And that came from me doing some deep inner work that I chose to do. Didn't know Jesus, didn't know Allah, didn't know Buddha come and do that for me. Although I will say that the ancestors intercepted and interceded on some things. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, that's where that those feelings of low self-worth came from, and I pinpointed that because a lot of the times when we don't feel good about ourselves and we have low self-esteem, it's because it could be from some childhood stuff that we never dealt with, and when you don't deal with those issues, it will spill into your adulthood, and it will cause you to make, you know, some type, you know, poor choices, I should say.
Ashe, that's deep, because, you know, immediately when I heard you say that, I'm thinking typically, you know, when we as women are found in these kinds of situations, it's for the opposite. It's because the father was missing, but it's not who was missing. It's the point of not feeling worthy of that love, I guess. It really doesn't matter what the trauma was necessarily. It's that lack of, if you will. That's deep, sis. That's a very good point to bring out to the listeners.
And I will also say that my father At the time when my mother, you know, allowed my dad to raise me, my father, the woman that he was with who actually raised me, my mother, Georgette, they were established, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And my mom, my biological mom, my dad, and my mother who raised me, they all knew each other from the streets because they used to use dope. They used to sell dope, you know, in the life. And so my mother who raised me and my dad, they decided to get their life together. But my biological mom, she decided not to. She just wasn't ready at the time. And so as time went on, my mom who raised me and my dad, they ended up relapsing. So then my grandmother took over at the age of 5. And so my father was in and out of my life. He was there, but he wasn't present. And that need for male connection, because I'm going to tell you what a daddy does in a daughter's life.
Mm-hmm.
What a daddy does for a little girl, he teaches her how to have a non-sexual relationship with a man. And he instills that confidence that she needs. You know what I'm saying? And so still in the fact that I felt that my mom didn't love me and I felt unwanted. And then on top of that, my father not being present in and out because he relapsed, so he was in the dope game. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So all of that compounded. And then when dudes would holler at me, it was like, oh, man, you know, and they would say, you know, beautiful things that I wanted to hear. It just made me feel good. And I also felt that they really liked me or they really loved me. And, so all that.
So, in the process,
I'd like to interject.
Go ahead, Greg.
If I may, I'd add on to the conversation. Me being a former abuser, I can concur to that, and what Queen has described is just not for people who didn't grow up without their parents, I mean, without the father. Because I used to target women who worked in corporate. I used to date a sister who was a sister principal. I dated a sister who was a director of finance in business, and I played that game. I came in silent and sweet, you know, the nice guy, the guys that women the guys that women want to get with, and then find out that they're a monster. I was that guy. So I want to say that too, because a lot of women who are probably listening think it only happens to women who live in the hood or the rural areas, you know, women who, quote unquote, maybe not be degreed. You know, it didn't matter. If I found the weakness, I exploited it, because there are three types of abuse. There's physical, which is extreme. But the top two are mental and emotion, and that's how you get them. So I just want to say that, you know, like the Queen was saying, you know, I was that guy. I was that dude. I mean, because I was that dude because I looked for people who were weaker than me, who were posing like me, putting on another face like me. You know what I'm saying? So you play the game. Every woman that I had abused wasn't exactly stupid. Every woman that I abused wasn't named Shaniqua, you know, and a lot of them, and also a few of them wasn't black. So, and I'm going past that. But so I could tell you everything that she's talking about is that, you know, it's a weakness. It's, you know, a person who abused, they're a predator, so they're patient. And then at the last minute, they want to, then they establish themselves. They get you comfortable. You know, like the spider said to the fly, come into my web, said the spider to the fly. That's how it works. It's like how white folks came to Africa. They came with Jesus and all that, and look what happened. They fucked us. And that's how people do. They can be preacher. They can be imam, all that. It abuse, it's like dope. It don't discriminate. It attacks everybody. And to that, I yield.
Ashay, I yield to you, sis.
Oh, okay. Thank you for that, King. That's some really good information to put out there. But, yeah, you know, we have to be aware. You know, we got to be aware of the red flags. You know what I'm saying? And that's something that, you know, we hardly ever talk about, you know, and some of the red flags, you know, the dude, and this goes both ways. It ain't just a dude that can be abusive. A woman can be abusive, too. You know what I'm saying? Because she may have been abused herself and probably got to the point where I'm not going to allow no brother to talk to me or do this or do that. And then she take on the characteristics of an abuser, and then she act out and abuse her dude, you know. So it goes both ways. You know, so the abuser may tell you, you know, that you can never do anything right. You know, you always doing something real stupid, you know. Shows extreme jealousy of your friends, time spent away. I remember with my second husband, when I was going to school, he was extremely jealous of me. You know what I'm saying? He was like, you know, you ain't going to school. You out there seeing another brother. You know, he didn't use those words, you know, but I'm, and I was like, I am in school, you know, and I'm going to school and I'm doing this. I was so stressed out behind his fist that I ended up dropping out of school, you know what I'm saying, to please him. You know, so sometimes we'll do that, you know, where we on a, we are working towards our goal, and the dude might be jealous because we spending too much time away from the house, because we are working on our goals or whatever, and say that they don't like that, or you know, you seeing somebody else. Not saying they don't like it, but they'll say you seeing somebody else. That's a red flag right there.
Absolutely.
Or they may, you know, they may put you down, call you stupid, you know, ain't nobody gonna want you, you know, you just things like that. And so we have to be aware of those red flags, or when a brother or a sister does something that may trigger, you know, us because of our past, then we have to be aware of that. You know, but then sometimes we don't may not even know our own triggers, because we don't even know who we are. We just going along with the flow.
Yeah. And thank you for sharing that, Brother Sebek, because it, you know, it's one thing to hear us sisters talking, but to hear your unity and, you know, allowing us to affirm, you know, what we have been through, what we may have seen others go through. You know, it's always helpful to have varying opinions, if you will, from brothers and sisters. So thank you for that. Hold tight. I'm going to bring in a caller. Last four digits, 3165. Welcome to Sign of the Times. Who are we speaking with?
Hi, Queen K. This is Sister Cammie. How are you?
Hey, Sister Cammie. Welcome. I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. I hope y'all can hear me okay. I'm in traffic, so I hope y'all can hear me okay.
Yes, we hear you fine, sis.
I just want to, first of all, commend the brother that came on the call to actually say what he said, because it takes a strong brother to actually come out and admit that. And I just want to commend you on that, first and foremost, brother. I've been in, you know, domestic violence situations, been through it pretty much my whole life. It's, you know, it's nothing new for me. My husband that I'm with now, we've been together a long time, so that's a whole different ball game. He's very conscious, and, you know, we really don't have those issues. So, but growing up, I definitely did. My dad left my mom I was probably five. I had daddy issues. Didn't know it at the time what my issue was, but the only difference with me was I was aggressive myself. I was not the type of girl that a guy was going to smack, and that was going to be the end of the conversation, because I'm a fighter. And my mom pretty much warned any boyfriend I ever had, you're going to put your hand, if you put your hands on it, there's no need for, I don't need to tell you, because she's not that girl. But, you know, I had issues that I had to deal with myself. But we all know that there's a problem, but we got to figure out what the root of this problem is. And I talk to a lot of young sisters where I live at, and that go through this, and I tell them all the time, you know, a lot of us sisters, and I'm not taking the heat off the brothers, but a lot of this stems from a brother not understanding and overstanding a relationship with a woman because he never had that relationship with his mother. And I can say this because the relationship between my husband and his mom is just utterly, there are no words. And it took some, I don't want to say training, but it took a lot of us working on that because she completely dropped the ball on that. And we have a lot of sisters out. That's the first most important relationship to a young boy, a young seed that's a brother, is the relationship with his mom. And I tell these young sisters all the time, you want to know how this young brother is going to treat you? Look how he talks to his mom. Look how he treats his mom. But we have so many of our mothers out here, and not down on them, because sometimes, life happens. You know what I'm saying? So, but a lot of it stems from that. And I just think, the root of it is, as queens, we have to do a better job of making sure these young brothers know what it's like to treat a woman. So, at the age of 4 and 5, they need to be understanding how to treat a woman, how to talk to a queen, and for them to know that your sister, that's a queen. I don't care if she's your friend, your girlfriend, your sister, your mom, whatever. They need to have that embedded in them soon as possible. And a lot of these brothers don't get that. Moms are MIA, and sometimes it's the grandma or whatever that woman figure is in their life growing up. As queens, we have to make sure that these brothers are getting that, because a lot of the brothers I know that put their hands on women, and a lot of them, from my younger years, I'm friends with now, but because I overstand. I look at their mom, and I look at their relationship with their mom and how they was raised, and I overstand. I don't dog them, but I completely overstand. And I think that's a lot of root of the problem that a lot of us queens, as a people, we need to address and do a better job of.
Ashe. Thank you for that, sis. Go ahead, Brother Sebastian.
I would like to say, sister, I appreciate you saying that, and I support everything you said because you are absolutely correct. But let us not, like you said before, you're not leaving out the brothers. You see, the thing for me was that I grew up in an abusive home. I imitated, when I realized I imitated the guy that I hated so much, I had to make a change. You feel me?
Yeah.
And I want to overstand that, because being a king, I'm a king, meaning that I overstand how the kingdom works. Being king doesn't mean being boss. Being king is able to solve problems and bring together a nation cooperatively. That's what a king is. So when I realized I was part of the problem, had to become part of the solution, I would say that brothers have dropped the ball and continue to drop the ball in this time and age. We know the system. We know America for what it really is. And we have allowed a system for a period of time to dictate to us who we were. And in this time of awakening, it's time for brothers to step up, because sisters, no offense, it takes a man to teach a boy how to treat a woman, and it shows a woman to fine-tune him. Because in order to be a man, in order to treat a woman correctly, you have to be a man in the first place. And a lot of brothers don't know what it means to be a man yet, because that's been taken from us. So brothers like me who take chances, who go through the school of hard knocks, take chances and still judge by everybody, even my conscious brothers and sisters. I'm used to Christians dogging me out and Muslims. I'm used to people in high spaces, everybody judges me, but this work has to be done. This is my lane. And it ain't easy getting on here saying this, because even now, people judge me constantly, but it has to be done. So I want to say thank you, but understand, when a brother comes to assist, please allow us to assist. Because a lot of single moms, when a brother do step up to the plate, that don't do the things that abusers do, because of that abuse, you reject that man. And that has to be corrected. So we have a hell of a job for us. That's why I work in mental health. That's why I'm a peer support, because we have people who may be alcoholics, dope fiends, abuse. No one's attacking those issues. And that's why I do what I do. So what you said to me humbles me very much. Believe me, I'm not the man that I should be, but I'm not the man that I used to be. So I thank you for that. So let us brothers help you. There are brothers out here who are dying to help.
Real talk.
Ashe.
Oh, and I agree. I want to take all the heat off of another brother. I was just saying us queens need to do our parts, because some of our brothers, they got to want to be right as well. So I agree with you 100%, brother. Ashe.
Hold tight. I'm going to bring in the next caller. Last four digits, 2461. Welcome to Sign of the Times. Who are we speaking with?
This is Joe Young, Queen. How are you?
I'm well, Brother Hello. Joe. How are you? Welcome.
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you very much. I just wanted to chime in on this conversation, especially as it relates to how sexism and the objectification of women is just codified in law. It's codified in our history. It's codified in our religion. I mean, even if when you look at the Bible, just right off, Eve is responsible for everything. And she's penalized and punished for her so-called wrongdoing by a painful childbirth. And again, even in, and when we look around the world, and when we look at it in America, it just, women are just, we view them as second-class citizens. It's just like other isms, whether it's racism or economic exploitation. We do not value women. Men do not value women. Mm-hmm. And it's passed on. From our fathers to the sons, and we repeat this abuse and this objectification. Mm-hmm. And I can, but I just want to put it in context. It's just not we're not evil people. We're not bad people. This sexism is something that happens in a context, in a world context, and we get these signals that women are to be abused and to be objectified in every aspect of our life, whether we're watching a movie, what it's in books. It's just in all of our experience. And it's a worldwide phenomenon. So it's really something huge that we need to fight. And everybody need to be part of this. In undermining this objectification of women. And I can remember my own father being verbally, emotionally, and physically abusive to my mother. And this is just not my story. It's all of our stories. I mean, it's probably a rare family where this kind of abuse didn't occur in. Despite race, despite economic status, zip code, all of that. Mm-hmm. And when I became an adult, I found myself being abusive. Mm-hmm. And even despite me being conscious or considered myself as a conscious person, there was still these tendencies to be abusive. Emotionally and physically. And for me, I realized, again, from our culture, that where this was coming from, it wasn't just my father. He got it from the same place I got it from. We got it from the society in which we live in. And so at that point, I began to, transform myself. And it didn't stop just with women. I have three grown children. My oldest is 43. I've never spanked my children. I've never raised my voice at them. I never acted that way. Because it's also verbal. Again, it's also emotional.
Mm-hmm.
So I talk to my children. And I teach them to do the same thing. You don't get physical with people, with anyone. You talk it through, and you keep your composure, and you be calm. And we also have to look at the fact that not only do we abuse women, we also abuse our children. Mm-hmm. And people quote the Bible talking about, sparing the rod and all that. But for me, it's about not being violent in any way whatsoever. Not being violent toward women not being violent toward men not being violent, people not being violent toward children. And in fact, taken on a global level, I think in terms of just being us having a peaceful world, being anti-war.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I'm at on this issue, just being nonviolent, period. Because for me, it's hard to separate. It'd be hard to separate those things.
Mm-hmm. You're right. The society has made it to a certain extent normal to be in situations of abuse, whether it be man to woman, woman to child, child to parent. Even nowadays, we see even more so of that. And so you raise an excellent point, and we see it in on social media, especially all the time, where people are going out of their way even to be abusive and have it recorded and have many people as possible see it, And so, and you're absolutely right. I mean, we've created a normalcy of violence and to the point where our children can't even go to school anymore and not be under some sort of stress even in the school, environment, which, it was always one of the safe places, one of the safest places to be other than home and church at one point in our community especially. So how do we address this? How do we address the fact that we've accepted it to a certain extent by allowing it to happen, by not addressing it when the people who happen to be guilty of it are close to us? Because silence definitely allows for this kind of thing to continue to grow and take place. And two, where are we at as a society? Are we even ready to take on this issue? And is there a way to work this into the Africana womanism movement? How does this come into play when we look at it from that perspective? And I yield back to the caller. And if you're listening on your phone, push 1. If you'd like to come into the conversation, if you're listening on the computer, you can dial in at 917-889-8059. And I yield with that.
I'd like to address that, if I may. And the brother made an excellent point. I agree with him, but we have to understand and explain what nonviolence is, because society has shown us that even in nonviolence, there's violence. Malcolm said that he only condoned violence as a means of self-defense, and that's the point we need to focus ourselves on. We look at the Black Power movement, the Black Liberation movement, we really look at it in a very limited aspect. Because the issue is nonviolence will never occur as long as there are violence. But the thing of learning self-defense is self-defense is not with just a gun. Self-defense.
How can we have a self-defensive posture when we're trying to heal in our community with our people? I'm confusing the two. We can have a self-defense posture when it comes to our oppressor, but this particular conversation is around addressing the issue of the violence in our homes and how we've silenced it for too long and how we're going to move forward from it. So, how we deal with the oppressor, in my humble opinion, is not the same as we should deal with one another. I know Sister Tessinette doesn't have but an hour. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I yield.
No, I wanted to say that as far as self-defense, according to me, people like me who have done the deed and step up. Because I have to defend the fact that we're looking at one side of the fence. In order for us to solve the problem, we have to look at both sides of the fence. So the issue is that I can't speak generally for that question, but for me and others like me, we step up. That's all to it. Because the law is not going to help us, correct? And the fact is that because people who see it don't say nothing, or people who see it and don't care because they don't want to be involved. So we have to have people like me to share our stories. It don't take people like me to feel me. That's what it's going to take. People like me to tell the truth, and that will arm people to see, to hear from somebody who will tell you the first time you feel uncomfortable when a man touch you and it's a little firm, you need to leave. That's the first time when you feel a man is condescending to you. Don't let it pass. You need to leave. I'm the guy that's going to, you know, it's going to be guys like me who are doing hands-on work. And I don't want to take away from my queen, because my queen know I put in work doing this. And to that, I yield the floor.
I want to say that that we need that when we do see it, you know, we do see our sister being talked down to, being hit. We need to get involved. We can no longer say, "Oh, well, that's not my business." But that is our business. Mm-hmm. If we say that, you know, we're conscious and we in the black community, we the black conscious community, and, you know, we about our brothers and about our sisters, about being unity. You can't say that you are about unity among black and brown. Among black people, and you see your sister queen being totally disrespected, and you just turn ahead. No, we need to get involved. That's the only way we gonna resolve this, and by people speaking out, like Brother Sebek, like my King Sebek, like me, you know, and showing that, you know, we, in order for us to move forward, we got to deal with this, because we can't say, you know, that we gonna do this, but over here our house is burning down.
Right, and there's a certain fear and shame that confessing something like this can trigger in people, but the more support we offer to one another and uplifting one another, even if it's not on this particular subject matter, will have a tendency to give more courage, if you will, to our brothers and sisters to speak out. And so I yield back to Sister Cammy and Brother Young. Do you have a comment?
I just want to share a situation that it just along what we're talking about. So a few years ago, my husband's cousin, young brother, had just did a little over 20 years in the joint. As most of our brothers do, they get somewhat conscious, you know, when they locked up. So he spent most of his adult life in prison. So he get out and got his life together, conscious, trying to raise his, you know, trying to raise his seeds and do the right thing. So he goes to the club and see a couple brothers that we all know, we all grew up together, but they was disrespecting this young lady. I'm not going to call her a queen. She is a sister, but she is not at queen status. She got some situations. She have a habit. That is neither here nor there. She's still one of our people. And the brothers was talking to her real bad, you know, acting like they wanted to put their hands on her. Now, my husband's cousin decided, You know, ma'am, why don't you lay off the sisters, you know, and just, long story short, just because he spoke up trying to do the right thing, they jumped my husband's cousin. And apparently they started losing the fight, because apparently my husband's cousins got hands, as they say. And long story short, they started losing the fight, pulled out a knife and stabbed him to death. And he died right there at the club. So I understand when you have situations like that, it's hard for you to stand on the ground of you need to get involved. Because amongst our people, and we all been there, you see something going and you want to say something, but once you start being aware of your surroundings, you saying something at that point in time might not be, you know, the best thing. I've been in situations where I have wanted to say something to a brother, you know, why you talking to that queen like that? But I look at my surroundings. My husband isn't with me. You know, this guy got five or six guys with him. And just the fact that he talking to this queen like that, I already know his mental is nowhere near where it should be, because he talking to her like that. So I can only imagine if I step in what he's going to do to me. And then he going to have to deal with my husband. And we all going to end up on the news at some point. So I think my question is, at what point Do you have to make a conscious decision? Is this the best time for me to intervene? You know, it's a tough call. People have died, and it's just a tough call to make, when to say the right thing, when is the time to step up, or do you just need to make a couple phone calls, or, you know, hey, you know, I got a situation over here. Maybe a couple of y'all brothers can come talk to this brother because he, you know, he getting out of pocket. And I just wanted to share that. I yield the floor.
911.
Can I say something? 911. I suggest that. I suggest, you know, I wouldn't even suggest 911 right now. You know what I'm saying? That, I think that would be the last resort. If we could get some brothers, you know, to come to the scene, you know,
right,
and intercede first. Because
mm-hmm.
you know what the law going to do. They just going to lock them up and don't give a damn. Well, we, since we know what's going on, you know, then I think, yeah, we would start with that first option about calling some brothers, you know, to try to intercede.
Right.
And then
right.
if it continues to escalate, then, you know, we could call 911. But that's a good suggestion. I like that.
Yeah, definitely.
And I yield.
Definitely. Brother Young?
Yes, I'm just listening. I'm just taking it all in. I think all the comments are very helpful to people who find themselves in these situations and to people who, you know, are just bystanders. These are good suggestions on what actions
mm-hmm.
We can take. And one of the things I do is every opportunity I get is to talk to young brothers, young men, and talk about some of the interrelated issues that leads to violence, domestic violence in particular, like not paying your child support. Some of these young guys, they just want to buy Pampers and buy shoes as needed. And I'm saying, look, she wants that check. Send her that money. You don't get into what she's going to do with it. If you lay down with her, and had a baby with her, she's responsible enough to use that little chump change you're giving her for these kids. But if you take care of some of those things, such as and be show up for visitation, spend time with your children. Those, if you do those things, that eliminate the need for some of the anger. But if you're not paying your child support and you're not showing up, she's angry, the children are angry, and those are some of the things that can lead to domestic violence. And I can see it here. I'll listen to some comments about some of the things that I
Ashe.
Personally do.
Ashe, thank you for that. And, you know, one of the things that we've talked about in our Africana Melanated Womanism the sessions that we've had around some of the things that we see as needs in our community, one of the things that came out is more of a support base so that so many of our children, especially post-welfare reform, so many of our children aren't reliant on the system, and so many of our families aren't vulnerable to state-imposed laws and things like that that can sometimes throw our families into stressful situations, even though we know that the aid or whatever does not is a drop in the bucket comparatively speaking to what it actually costs to live. It's a big hurdle for the family to have to overcome should something happen to that aid. And with all of these welfare reform laws, there has been an increase in the amount of violence that we've seen both against children and spousal abuse, but especially with our women. And so, you know, that's one of the things that we said that we have set as a goal is to set up a support base, you know, see who in our community has access to resources, has access to some of the things that could help alleviate some of the stresses on the families that we see. And it's my you know, again, humble opinion that having that safety net in place to enable our sisters to get over that stressful period, to take the weight off of some of our brothers' backs so they won't feel forced into the streets to commit illegal activities, which, you know, let's keep it real, we're dealing with the need to live and survive. And, you know, although we have been guilty of being too materialistic, nobody wants to be homeless. So sometimes our brothers mm-hmm. are forced into situations where they have to get out here and hustle. So Sister Tessin, that before we get ready to close, and in the research that you've done, what are some of the things that you see we could be doing or need to be doing to create that safety net so that we can have, I guess, rebuild the village and it has some resources for those who are in need so we can problem solve ourselves? And I yield back to you.
I think what we need to do is first identify the resources that, you know, our families need to be able to create that safety net, and to make sure that those resources are available. Even if we, you know, even if we have to, you know, create the resources and follow through. You know, if a sister call and say, you know, I need some Pampers, you know, then we need to have, you know, that safety net that that we know that we can go to, and they have what that sister needs. So I just feel that we need to be more committed, you know, to each other and to creating that that safety net, you know, and making sure that the resources are there, and not saying it, you know, on paper, but actually mm-hmm. go there and we see that is there.
Mm-hmm. Ashe, hold on. I'm going to bring in our last caller for the evening. Last four digits, 4122. Welcome to Sign of the Times. Who are we speaking with?
This is K-Mac. How are you, Queen?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I just wanted to say, you know, this is one of those topics that I always appreciate when it comes up. I've been listening, and I'm one of those who will intervene. I have intervened. I've been held at gunpoint. I will continue to intervene. It might be my insanity, but I'm going to help my people the best I can. I'm also a person who makes sure that and verify resources in our community. One of the things I do tell people is don't tell someone that you'll be there if you're really not going to be there. And the other thing is when he or she is fleeing these domestically violent situations, it escalates. The danger level does escalate. This is one of the reasons you want to be, you know, careful with your advice. And I do urge people to stop thinking that, oh, he or she can just leave. It doesn't work that way. Unfortunately, I've met families who have been domestically violent 40, 50, 60 years. It is a way of life, unfortunately. I'm not condoning it. When you have had that violence for so long, it is very hard for them to walk away. Exercising patience, exercising safety is paramount. Making sure not only that you are aware of the resources in the community, but know how to get in touch with them 24/7. I have every resource for our community here. I have gone to meet the shelters, meet the financial people. I myself have learned how to do the crime victims compensation to help with relocation. These are things that we can learn free of charge to help them out. We just have to want to be involved. That's going to be mm-hmm. key to all of it. You have to want to be involved. So, I mean, I'm cool with several of the police officers that work on the domestic violence squad, and the reason I'm cool with them is so that we can make sure that we can coordinate services for him or her. And we were so adamant about it that we have shelters for him. When he is a domestic violence victim and running with his kids, I don't know how many communities have that, but we do. So, mm-hmm. you know, the face of violence is changing because the largest population in any of these shelters are children. Not men, not women,
yeah.
children, because they leave mm-hmm. with their children. So we have to understand mm-hmm. we need to really – this is one of those areas where our country is not going to pour any money into it because there is no solution. And it's going to take a community effort. You know, domestic violence, sexual assault, they're not going to pour money into that. You know, that's not the warm, fuzzy thing that has a cure, because there is no cure. But there mm-hmm. are helping resources out there, and I like the idea of having calling up other men. That's what I grew up with. Very rarely did I ever see a police officer come in for a domestic violence situation. It was the brothers on the block that handled that piece, and the sisters on the block handled her. So I'm not used to calling police, and that's probably why I will intervene myself, you know. And I do have a few young men that if I see something like that, I can give them a call, and they'll hop on their motorcycle or whatever, wherever I'm at, and handle the situation. So I've built that kind of a network, and that's something that we need to start doing. Hey, help me police my area no matter where I'm at. So there's a lot of things we can do, but the key, none of it works if you don't want it, if you don't love the people enough to do it. So that's pretty much all I had to say. But, you know, we got to change our mindset, because it is our problem. It will always be our problem, and we need to do something about it and be more active in helping that problem heal itself or lessen. And I yield.
Ashe, thank you so much for that, sis, and thank you for chiming in tonight. And maybe, you know, we can all work together to learn some of the things that you've learned from your experiences, mm-hmm. because that's, you know, another element of Africana Melanated Womanism, is that we're here to uplift and support one another. So definitely, you know, I would like to connect with you on that, so Sister Tessinette and I can continue to build with you.
Absolutely.
Ashe, so Sister Tessinette, before we let you go, can you tell the listeners where we can get your book and give us the title of the name of the book again, please?
Okay, so the name of my book is called Revelations Unveiling the Mask, and you can purchase it from Amazon.com. BarnesandNobles.com, and yeah, that's where you can purchase it at for right now.
Ashe. Well, thank you, sis, for being a part of the dialogue tonight. We're looking forward to having a part two to tonight's discussion, even if we have to do it on a weekend. We are talking about doing two Africana Melanated Womanism live video feeds during the month of March. So, again, sisters, if you would like to get involved with that, please reach out to us. Sister Tessinette, is it okay if people reach out to you on Facebook? Can you give your Facebook title, please?
Yes, you can reach me on Facebook, Tessinette Mary E.T.
Ashe,
and
I'll also
spell Tessinet.
I'll also put Sister Tessinette's page on Sign of the Times, New Power Radio Network, and my Queen Tahira page on Facebook if you missed it. Are you on Instagram too, sis?
Yeah, but I have a different name under that.
Okay. All right.
Yeah,
well,
I need to create another Instagram for
Tessinette. Ashe. Ashe, well, I'll make sure that I put your Facebook link on our pages. And, again, you know, we're looking forward to having a part two to tonight's discussion. I'm sorry that it's not the usual two-hour time span, but, you know, things happen for a reason. And I'm just thankful that we were able to have this discussion on this particular day, which is National Women's Day. And, you know, we need to recognize and appreciate each other a lot more than we do. So, sisters, I appreciate you. I love you. I thank you for your time and energy, and I thank the Creator for bringing us all together at this particular time so that we can do this work. And so with that being said, Sister Tessinette, thank you for being a co-host tonight. Thank you for being my guest. And, again, we're looking forward to having a part two to this. And, sis, I'm going to reach out to you as well. So until tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, this is Queen Tahira signing off for the evening. I'm going to go get some other work done. We'll see everybody tomorrow night at 6. Talk to you soon, everybody. Salute.
Ashe. Bye-bye.